When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Love this podcast because it crushes your dreams of getting rich quick.
They actually got me into reading stats for anything.
You're tuned in to the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Led by Andrew Sather and Dave Ahern.
Step-by-step premium investing guidance for beginners.
Your path to financial freedom starts now.
Starts now.
All right, folks, welcome to Investing for Beginners podcast. Today, we're going to do one of our Back to the Basics series. So this is a series of shows that we're going to do every week for about a few months. And we're going to talk a lot about Back to Basics investing. Today's topic, we are going to talk about portfolios, setting up a portfolio and diversification. So I guess without any further ado, let's just dive on in. So let's talk about portfolios, construction, and diversification. What does that mean to you? Maybe we can define those and then we can start from there.
Yeah, to me, diversification is important because you don't want all your eggs in one basket. And if that basket falls over, all your eggs crack. There goes your life savings. So any financial person who's financially literate with a grain of salt will tell you that you want to be diversified if you are depending on this money for your retirement, your life savings. You want to be diversified. And so that kind of like you implied at the beginning, that can mean so many different things to so many different people. But the bottom line is you want resilience against unexpected bad events. I don't have to remind us, you know, not too long ago, just a few years ago, we had, you know, a very unexpected global event. And those things happen. They take one form or the other. And so if your portfolio is not resilient, then all of your hard-earned money, savings, investing can all go to waste if you're not diversified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And to your point, in the last 24 years or so, we've had three pretty drastic global events that have rocked the stock market. We have the dot-com bubble, we have the great financial crisis, and we had the pandemic. And of the three, you could probably argue maybe we saw the dot-com bubble bursting, but you know, I would hazard to say back in 1999, not a lot of people had that on their bingo card. And certainly the great financial crisis came out of nowhere. And the pandemic, of course, obviously came out of nowhere as well. So to your point, you just never know when things are going to go south. And you have to prepare for that eventuality because at some point it will. History has shown us through, you know, how many centuries, decades, millennia have we seen upheaval
in the world. And as it gets more and more connected with technology, those things happen faster and probably within shorter time spans between one to the other kind of thing. So it behooves you to have your portfolio diversified enough that you can withstand those. There's no perfect diversification that I'm aware of. Is there one that I'm not aware of?
You're good.
Okay. All right. I guess when you're thinking about diversification, does that exist outside of an idea like building a portfolio, or is that part of the construction?
Yeah. I mean, for some people, right, diversification means multiple asset classes. Some people like to have a little bit of stocks, a little bit of real estate. Maybe they have some equity stake in a small business. Really depends on your own personal preferences. Mm-hmm. I've been studying the stock market for a little while now, and so I've become comfortable with the risks that come with the stock market. And so, like I've said on the show before, I'm happy having 95% of my net worth in the stocks that I pick for the Value Spotlight newsletter. But, you know, that's not for everybody. And I'm also in an accumulation phase of my wealth building. So I think age can play a part in what your diversification strategy is. I think it can and should probably change for most people as you age closer to retirement. Your financial goals obviously play a role in that. And then how much risk tolerance you just generally have and how confident you feel about your knowledge about the risks you're taking. Those can all be kind of factors into it. What about your side? Like, how do you feel about thinking of diversification inside of our portfolio and outside?
Well, I certainly think of it as it's part of the risk equation when I'm investing, for sure, because I need to ensure that I'm not putting all my eggs in one basket. And that's something that I was doing. And I saw it happening to me in real life, even though I could have stopped myself, but I didn't. Building up a bigger part of my pie occupied with the financial services and trying to kind of diversify away from that, because I saw how having a big position in a company that doesn't perform well, and then the whole sector is not doing great, it can definitely drag your portfolio down. And I'm talking about PayPal. PayPal at one point was around 7.5-8% of my portfolio, and it was doing quite poorly. I saw somebody on Twitter say it, define it as pain pal. And I was like, that's beautiful. That's what it's felt like. And so, but the rest of the financial sector, it was struggling too. So it made a lot of sense to start to try to move away from that to help offset those losses and also bank for a better day someday in the financial services. And that day is now starting to arrive, and the portfolio overall is doing better. But part of that is because I've diversified away from being, you know, 70% financial services, and now I'm down to 45%. So I'll keep working on that. But to me, that's part of building up the portfolio. When you're new, when you're starting off or you're newer to this, I think you're going to have some concentration just kind of naturally if you only have four or five companies. But as you get to 15 to 20, then you can start moving away from having such a large concentration. So like when you are starting off a portfolio, do you think it makes sense to go down the list, so to speak, from the, you know, this asset class to this asset class and blah, 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 blah? Or does it make more sense to just fish where the fish are and then start working from there?
Yeah, I think obviously if you're first starting out, the advice that we would give to anybody is if you have a 401k, make sure you're using it. And, you know, I don't want to say every single 401k plan, but I have a pretty decent feeling if I were to throw a dart at a 401k allocation, there's a pretty good chance that that allocation will be diversified. Mm-hmm. So just by having a decent chunk of your net worth in the 401k, you're probably going to have the diversification all played out. When it comes to building a portfolio, if you're just trying to be a stock picker and kind of do what I'm doing, where most of my net worth is in individual stocks, I do like that idea of fishing where the fish are, with a bit of understanding that things in moderation tend to be a good policy. I think that applies as well. As an example, I think a lot of us can agree commercial real estate is very much in a bear market right now. There are arguably some great deals and arguably exponentially more value traps. But, you know, no matter how bullish I am about commercial real estate, if I were to pick 5 months in a row of different commercial real estate companies in my portfolio, that's not really going to be great diversification. And the goal for all investors is to stay in. We want to run the race. We don't want to have to quit or be so discouraged that we throw up our hands and give up. And so as somebody who's starting for the first time, maybe building their own portfolio, I would say that sacrificing the optimal choice for the choice that's going to keep you in the game longest is probably the best move. And that's one reason why, even if I have the conviction to say, oh, you know, I'm smarter than everybody else and I know commercial real estate's a huge bargain right now, even with my experience, I would still temper down my optimism because I've been humbled by the market before, where it has shown me that, hey, you might be missing something. Mm-hmm. And to your point, David, when you have a heavy concentration in a company or industry, trying to come back from that, going from severe underperformance and trying to turn that around to make it outperformance, it's hard and it can take a long time, very long time. So, you know, luckily I haven't given up on it, but it would have been nice to not have to dig such a deep hole. And by diversifying, you can very simply do that right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have time to search the whole stock market? Tired of waiting through endless information? Instead, get my trusted stock picks at valuespotlight.com.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Budgeting was always a challenge for me. I struggled to find the best way to keep track of all of my money, not to mention all the time tracking down receipts, cataloging expenses, and trying to figure out what went wrong with my air quote system until Monarch Money. Monarch Money allowed me to easily see what is going on with my finances, helping me get a better handle on my spending, budgets, and more. It's my go-to app every day, more so than my bank, because I can quickly see where I am with my budgets and spending, allowing me to invest more and spend time on the things that I want to do. It's my GPS for money. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor. Invite them to your account at no extra cost, and they'll get their own login info and a joint view of all of your finances. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. In fact, Monarch Money is one of the first to bring you direct Apple Card, Apple Cash, and savings syncing with the latest iOS 17.4 update. Now you can sync your wallet directly for seamless budgeting. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. That's monarchmoney.com/beginners for your extended 30-day free trial.
So how far into, let's say, portfolio construction do you need to start thinking about the idea of diversifying? So let's say you're starting from zero and you've built a portfolio up to, like, say, let's say six companies. Yeah. Is that the point where maybe you want to start thinking about, okay, I need to start trying to look in these other sectors to see if there's other opportunities in there to try to get away from maybe the natural concentration you've developed because you're super into semiconductors, for example. And so maybe you've picked four or five companies that are in that industry. Do you think that's a good time to start moving away from that?
Yeah. I mean, there's certain things in investing that are kind of cut and dry. This is one of those. You can skin a cat a million ways. It's funny we're talking about this because literally this morning I was updating my portfolio rankings for Value Spotlight subscribers. And one of the parts of that report that I give every quarter is four stocks that if I was starting a new portfolio today, and for whatever reason, I just had to have all four stocks I wanted, you know, like a build a portfolio, right? Mm-hmm. Like an instant, I can put this in and out of the microwave comes a portfolio that's decently diversified. I look at that composite and it's stayed pretty much the same for the last three quarters. So there's a consumer cyclical, there's a healthcare stock, there is a commercial real estate stock, and there is financial services.
Okay.
So that feels very balanced, right?
Yeah.
Where you get, I mean, I wasn't intending to do the asset classes that way with the commercial real estate mixed in there, but you know, it's a balance of what I think is attractive now versus also just kind of keeping some sort of healthy mix in there. So that's one way to do it. Honestly, I felt like forced to put that build a portfolio out there because so many people ask for it.
Mm.
For me, I've always argued for just buy one stock every month and worry less about the portfolio concentration because over time, that diversification will happen. You just have to be patient. But I understand people like want to check boxes and say, okay, I got my portfolio diversified. And there's something to say for that too. So yeah, I mean, could take it a lot of different ways. Is there a way you did it when you started? And is there a way you think works best for a beginner?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I first started, I was kind of in the same mode of just trying to find the best thing I could and just buy whatever is going to work and just try to go from there. And then as I continued to build up the portfolio, then I started thinking about, you know, I have two banks, I have something in the commercial landscape, I have something, you know, I have a REIT. Maybe I need to start looking at maybe some possible technology or thinking something outside of the area that I've started to look. And that's kind of how I started to naturally evolve it. I mean, I know that the optimal portfolio is 20 stocks, 5% each kind of thing. And there's an idea around that, especially in the 401k rebalancing idea, is that always trying to keep everything within a certain, you know, parameter of this percentage of this and this percentage of that. I'm not here to bash that. And there, I think there's probably some good to that. But I think I also go back to this idea, and this is something I've learned more recently, is kind of letting your winners run. And so if you get a good company and it's performing well and it's executing well, then why trim that to give more to something that's not doing as well? You know, that whole Peter Lynch idea, you know, why are you cutting the flowers to water the weeds kind of thing? Or, you know, as Charlie likes to say, like throw a million anecdotes at this, but, you know, Charlie always liked to say, never unnecessarily interrupt compounding, you know. And that's something that I've kind of grown into more. Our friend Brian Feraldi, I remember him saying that he liked to buy things around 2 to 3% and let them grow into a larger position because they perform well. And I think there's something to that as well. But I think all those ideas kind of work around the idea of diversifying. And to me, diversifying is not necessarily something I put really high on the list to do. It's just something I naturally do because I try to look around for different ideas. And when I feel like I'm well represented in the financial space. So unless something comes along in that arena that is like so obviously awesome that I have to own it, then I may look at replacing it with something else as opposed to just adding it to the portfolio. Maybe one of the companies, PayPal is underperforming and I could replace it with said company. But for me, it's just something that's just kind of naturally evolved. And I try to keep my eyes open when I'm trying to determine what kind of new investments would be potentials. And I just naturally gravitate away from the financial services now just because it's become a larger portion of my portfolio. But I also try to not just plug a hole, just to plug a hole. We talked about this in the past. I'll bring it up briefly. Just because there's a list of 7 to 9 different asset classes you should have doesn't mean you have to have them. And it doesn't mean that doing that will automatically diversify your portfolio. Because if you pick 2 really, really bad things in that particular asset class, just to air quote fit a hole, then you're doing yourself a disservice and you're going to hurt your performance over a longer period of time. Because once you buy a company, it's a heck of a lot harder to sell it because of our emotions.
I feel like you dropped so much like time-tested wisdom in there that I hope it doesn't go past people who are trying to learn from this. Maybe on that second point, since it was the most recent one, I feel that getting over the idea that I need to have everything in my portfolio, it's a lot harder to do than to say, because FOMO is one of those things that you have to fight every day, just like you have to fight laziness and, you know, physical pain. But I think FOMO, being able to fight FOMO, fear of missing out, can really do a lot of things for your portfolio. Because if you can fully step away and say, I mean, I love your thoughts on fighting FOMO, but for me, I think a big realization is like, there is no investor who can call every single hot fad. Like, there's always one, right? Like, you know, Cathie Wood was first to the innovation. Ron Barron was first to Tesla. Dan Ives has been raving about Apple, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody kind of has their one thing. Bill Miller, Amazon, and Bitcoin. Right? Yeah. Everybody kind of has their one or two things, but nobody's gotten NVIDIA first and got Amazon first and got
and Google first and Bitcoin first. And,
nobody has. And so if nobody has, and yet there's still so many investors who've done well and beat the market, maybe that tells you that I can have more reassurance that the market's not going to just pass me by. I just have to find my place in it. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of how you beat FOMO? Is there a different way that kind of helps you? Because it's hard. It's really hard.
Like, it's really hard.
Especially we feel like we have to keep up with everything because, you know, we're out there looking at stocks every day.
Right.
How do you fight that? And how does that fit into portfolio construction?
What's the best way to get started in the market? Download Andrew's ebook for free at stockmarketpdf.com.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle and I turned and looked and it was already moving away and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75 degree angle straight down almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around. Go home.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Well, what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it, and we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, for me, it's actually a lesson learned. So it makes it easier. So I fell under the sway of FOMO when I bought PayPal. And, you know, I bought it at 300 some bucks a share. It's now trading around 60 something. and it was at a 50 some PE or something crazy like that. And I bought into the FOMO, and it has been a painful lesson. And it's, you know, it's a stark reminder every time I look at my portfolio and I see that company and I see that return, like, oh, you know, it just reminds you that there is not an infinite price you can pay for anything. So whether you're looking at NVIDIA right now, for example, it's shot up from, I don't know the exact numbers, $400 some to $800 or $900, whatever it's trading at. I don't pay much attention to it. And it would be really easy to fall into the FOMO because you see all these other people, especially on social media, you see all these other people gloating and taking victory laps because they've done so well with buying that company. And hats off to them. That's awesome. I missed the boat. Okay, I missed the boat. And I try to have this mindset that I can't swing at every pitch. I can't know everything about every single company, and I can't know everything about every single sector. And that also means that you're going to miss things. You're going to miss out on NVIDIA. And who knows if that goes on to become, you know, the next Amazon for the next 15 years. Who knows? It may, it may not. And time will tell on that. But I will say this, that I guess being a student of history and knowing enough about the stock market history that even though we missed out, you know, you and I missed out on NVIDIA, for example, there's going to be another opportunity for something, whatever it may be. It could be Novo Nordisk, which I missed on too, but it could be the next whatever. And we guess right on this particular thing and that becomes the next thing. And so there's always, you know, Mr. Market shows up every day. And I know that's something that we talk a lot about, but for me, I feel like I've internalized it, especially because in the light of making the mistake with PayPal and doing that dumb thing, falling for FOMO, just now whenever I have that automatic break in my head, every time I go, it helps me tamp down that temptation because I don't want to go through that again. I'd rather miss. For me, the missing doesn't hurt as much as taking the swing and missing badly, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's how I help, you know, work around it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. So now you got to keep it in your portfolio.
Right. Well, I did reduce it. I got some good advice from our friend Brian Withers, and I did reduce it. So it's, I think, only 1% of my portfolio now. And I've took that money and put it into other better things that you were suggesting. So, but I still own it. And it's partly for that. It's a painful reminder that, hey, this is what happens when you do the dumb things.
Right. Okay. It's like the bass or the buck on the wall, except it's maybe upside down or something.
Yeah, right. It's a painful reminder of what you did.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, that's good.
So I guess maybe kind of pivoting a little bit off of that idea, what do you feel like is maybe too much concentration? Like at what point do you get to a point where it's like, okay, either one company is this much of your portfolio or I'm in this much of the sector, you know, whether it's financial services like Dave or whether it's, you know, something else, retail or something of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, if the first couple questions weren't hard enough, here's when it really ratchets up the difficulty scale. My goodness. You know, I struggle because, like I said, in the past, I had a 20-25% concentration on things. Mm-hmm. And that took my portfolio for a wild ride. And arguably, I could have ended up a lot worse if American Eagle didn't rebound like it did.
Right.
I don't even want to know. But that said, like, I shouldn't let my experiences necessarily paint a negative picture on concentration in this, I think, this particular topic. Because, you know, taking the NVIDIA example again, someone might have a special insight into the technology and like just really understand that company way better than I ever will. And so maybe for that person, 40% makes all the sense in the world, right? But for someone like me, maybe 5 or 10% is all I'd be comfortable with. It's a comfort level. I mean, I tried to look at like Warren Buffett, I feel like is a good template for a lot of things. And he's done, it's somewhere between when he loads up into something, he goes anywhere from 25% of his portfolio into, I think his biggest was like 40% of his portfolio. And he lets it ride too. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's interesting that he's never started a position over 50%. Mm-mm. And I think there's some math behind it, but I just find that interesting, that idea that 40% seems to be near the high range of what you tend to see. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of anecdotally looking at what I've observed with a lot of big investors,
mm-hmm. right?
That's not counting somebody who maybe never made a name for themselves, but had a even bigger concentration. So that all said, like, what about you? What do you have an upper range for yourself or for the average investor?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like what I've seen on social media and just studying other investors and people we've talked to, it feels like 20% is like an upper limit for most people. And when you start to get above that, then it starts to become, you really got to be the expert in this particular space or this particular company. And some of it can just be that the performance is driven it that way. You know, I know the Buffett, the example people always like to throw out there is with Buffett. And he, like you said, he's gone up to 40% for a portfolio size, but even Apple wasn't, he didn't back the truck up initially. He started small and then he built up to it, but the company, the stock also performed and really took off. And so it became 50% of his portfolio. And even since then, he's trimmed it a little bit. And so it's kind of stayed in that roughly 50% range. And so, you know, he obviously has a lot of confidence in that investment. I don't know that I could get to that level of confidence with a company. Maybe I could if it was something that I owned for 10 or 15 years, you know, a Berkshire, if I bought Berkshire Hathaway in the 80s, for example, I'd probably be okay with that being 20, 25, 30% of my portfolio. And I think if it starts to creep above that, then I would probably start to get nervous and have to figure out how am I going to mentally deal with this? You know, because you're going to deal with, if you sell any part of it, then you're going to feel that loss even as the company continues to perform. And so then there's that loss aversion, or that not loss aversion, but just the, you know, the pain that you feel from not still owning, you know, this extra 2% of the company. I think that can set you back too. So, you know, for me, I think it's probably, I haven't had this happen yet, so I'm hoping it happens soon. But 25-30% is probably my range. And then I'll start to have serious conversations with myself about what do I do with this.
Yeah. I struggle saying like what's a good policy as well, mm-hmm. because I feel like my objective even is different than the average investor. If I was an average investor who is like already at their retirement number and I had 50% ready on something, well, who cares, right? Like if it's your retirement's already set, we're talking about a completely different ballgame than someone like me who's trying to hit 11% annualized for 40 years. Yep. Two completely different ball games.
Yes. Yeah. Two completely different ball games. And that has a big bearing on your portfolio, your construction of the portfolio, diversification, how much you're going to take, what kind of risk you take or don't take. You know, those all have to be factored into it. And I would hazard to say the more experience, this is just a guess on my part, the more experience that you get with investing as well as particular companies that you own for a long period of time, I think your comfort level of owning them at larger parts of your portfolio probably increases exponentially as well.
Which is scary, right?
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. You know, there's a couple guys on FinTwit that I follow. One in particular, he's 100% of Palantir. That's his only position.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I applaud him for that concentration. I couldn't do it, but he certainly knows the company. Right. And if you ever have any questions about Palantir, he's the person you're going to want to ask.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts, takeaways for really maybe like this? How can someone think about the basics of everything we've talked about today, look at some core takeaways when it comes to portfolio construction, mm-hmm. some core basics?
Well, I guess a couple things, a couple logs I would throw on the fire is, number one is when you're first starting out, worry more about trying to find the best companies that you can. If you're first starting out, take the step off the ledge, first and buy one company, and then you can start worrying about the other stuff after that. Then once you have your feet wet, you own a company or two, then you can start looking around to try to find things that you think are going to be the best fit for you. And then once you start to get to like six or seven companies, then I think you probably need to start looking around to see if there's other opportunities. Like, try to notice if you're investing in a narrower space. And if you are, then try to look and see if there's other opportunities that you may be missing because you're being so focused on a particular area. And that can happen. And I think once you kind of get to that point, then I think you need to start looking to see if there's other opportunities, as well as just in reinvesting in the things that you already own. Sometimes the best investment is one you already own. And so instead of worrying about acquiring a new company, you just reinvest more in Microsoft, for example. And I think that's a great way to go. And then once you start to get to the point where you maybe want to start expanding your circle, if you will, is try to stay within your circle of competence or the things that you can understand well. Try not to reach and go, okay, I'm going to buy, you know, NVIDIA, just because I think I have to have semiconductors and it's a super popular company. You know, all the other things that we teach, I think, need to kind of coalesce with that as well. And then I guess the last thing is, I know checklists are awesome. I love them. And going down lists and crossing off things is awesome. I love that feeling. But when you're investing, don't build a portfolio just because you have to have a commodity to go out and buy a commodity just because. It needs to be a good investment. And buying an energy sector company just because is not the way to build a portfolio. If you find a great opportunity, by all means, jump on it. But if not, then just don't buy a company. Don't buy gold, for example, just because I want to have a commodity. That may not be the best investment for you. Ethereum. That's not really a mineral, but you know, maybe, you know, copper is a better choice than gold, for example. I don't know. That's not my space. But anyway, those would be kind of three things that I would kind of throw out there. What about you?
I mean, what else can I throw out there if you throw out all the good ones? I think it's good. Keep diversified. Put eggs in more baskets rather than just one. Mm-hmm. And remember all those things.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, with that, we will go ahead and wrap up our conversation for today. I hope you enjoyed our Back to the Basics series. Again, this is going to be something that we're going to release once a week. We have 20 episodes planned, and we'll just release them every week. I think it's on Thursdays. So just come back to learn more about Back to the Beginner Basics of Stock Investing. So with that, we'll go ahead and sign us off. You guys go out there and invest with a margin of safety. Emphasis on the safety. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you all next week.
We hope you enjoyed this content. 7 Steps to Understanding the Stock Market shows you precisely how to break down the numbers in an engaging and readable way with real-life examples. Get access today at stockmarketpdf.com. Until next time, have a prosperous day.
The information contained is for general information and educational purposes only. It is not intended for a substitute for legal, commercial, and/or financial advice from a licensed professional. Review our full disclaimer at einvestingforbeginners.com.